Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome to episode 282 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I am Sean Penrod, your host. Welcome. How are you? Did you go to a pre-release last weekend for Dominaria? I did. I had a whole bunch of fun playing with some Dominaria cards and just having a bit of nostalgia as I used to play back in the day when the sets were still in Dominaria. So it was fun to see what modern Magic design can do with an old world that we used to be in. So it was really cool. I got Joyra in one of my packs. So it was really neat. The character that I recognize from the past. And I got Raph as well, one of the newest members of the Weatherlight. That was pretty cool. As well as Raph's older sister, right? Danitha, the knight that turned down the offer. And let's see, nothing else too terribly cool. No Planeswalkers, although my friend did pop a foil Karn for his promo, so that's pretty cool. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to go out to Paragon City Games and play a midnight pre-release. It's been a while since I was able to do that, and just had a blast. It was a lot of fun. So I'd love to hear what you think of the new set. Were you able to go to any pre-releases? How many did you go to? What did you think? What's working? What's not working? And are you excited for this set now that you've actually been able to play with it? So pop into the Facebook group. Let us know what you think. And if you're interested in playing with more Dominaria, then stay tuned because we'll be announcing the launch of the Dominaria Prodigy Sealed League here shortly, where we play off for prizes and the top 8 get some real stuff, including the number 1 player getting a bundle of Dominaria provided by Paragon City Games, who I might add is a sponsor of the show, and I'm so happy to be aligned with them. I encourage you to check out ParagonCityGames.com to see what they have going on. And before we dive into the interview, a huge thank you goes to the patrons for supporting the show directly. Because of you, things happen. So, friends, if you enjoy this podcast, if you feel that it has helped you level up, and if you feel that I have earned it, I encourage you to go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about the patron program. And everyone in the Bed of Plants level or higher is entered into a monthly drawing where we give away a Magic-related product. That said, we have an international guest here with us today, so I can't wait to hear his perspective on Magic and what he has done to make it to where he is. So let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to have our guests with us today. Our Danish guest has 2 Pro Tour Top 16s, 1 Mox win, and 1 Mox top 4. He averages 2 drafts per day and is a former pro poker player. Now he enjoys sports betting on soccer. He's married with no children, is 35 years old, and lives in Thailand. Prodigies near and far. Let's welcome the one, the only, Laz Dam. Laz, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take the game to the next level?
Yeah, let's see what we can fish out.
Excellent. Now, Prodigies, if you want to connect with Lars, you can find him on Twitter at _Malavi_. So that's where you can reach out and say thanks for being on the show, ask him a question, interact with him there on Twitter. So, Lars, first and foremost, let's talk a little bit about the non-Magic stuff. So obviously, being a Dane and living in Thailand, you're not born and raised in Thailand. So what are you doing there?
Well, I live here now, and I live here because it's a nice place to live. It's much warmer than Denmark.
Yeah.
That's true. I moved here originally because I was playing poker in Denmark and we were looking out at the gray January weather, me and a friend. And then we decided that there was no real reason to sit and look out at that weather and when we could play poker anywhere in the world. That was back when online poker was a big thing.
Right.
And then we ended up in Thailand instead.
That's great.
Just never move back since then.
That's cool. I've been in Thailand once when I was active duty Navy. I went on a deployment and we pulled into Phuket for a couple of days. So that's nice. I got to ride elephants and do kind of fun stuff there. So it was neat.
Yeah, it is. It is really a nice place to live, I think. Right. Weather is great. I love the food. There's lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, man, awesome. So fun, so fun. So is Magic all you do? Are you working or what else?
I sports bet for a living. I watch a lot of soccer games and I bet on them. But besides that, I just play Magic a lot. I love the game. I think it's really good. It's also helping me in my sports betting in some ways.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, I love Magic. I follow it a lot. I have done it for almost 23 years now, I think.
Wow. So take us back in time and tell us the story of the first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards.
Well, that must have been in like sixth grade. where some classmates were playing the game, and I did not play it back then. I just watched them play, and I thought, well, that looks okay. I wasn't so interested in it, I guess.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years went by, and they stopped playing. And at the time they stopped playing, in like eighth grade or so, I sort of picked up the game, and I spent the summer vacation between eighth and ninth grade just trading and playing throughout the whole summer. So, and after that, I was just hooked.
Yeah.
Then I just kept playing and playing and playing.
So what was your first set?
Probably Ice Age, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the first set where I was actively playing and trying to get the cards and doing things. But I mean, I wasn't playing competitively. It was...
Yeah, no, that's fine.
You know, as a kid, it was just playing and enjoying stuff and trading a lot.
What's been your favorite set?
Oh, my favorite set. Some of the recent ones have actually been very good. When I say favorite sets, I mean for drafting, because that's what I do. But I really enjoyed Eldritch Moon, and I also enjoyed Hour of Devastation, actually. I think both of those have been excellent. And if I have to go a long way back, it would be Mercadian Mask, the full block. I think that's really fun to play as well.
Nice. And because there's thousands, you don't have to pick a single one, but what is one of your favorite cards?
Oh, Windor, for sure.
Oh, wow. Okay, great.
I love playing with Windor.
So, for those who don't know, like me, what is it? What does it do? And why do you like that card?
It's a 2-mana artifact that says players can only untap one land. And if it's tapped, it doesn't work. You can make a lot of fun things with it if you have ways to tap it. So you get to untap all your lands and your opponent are still stuck sort of untapping one land a turn. So it's sort of a fair card, but there are many ways to like break it.
Yeah.
But I even like playing it like as a fair card, actually. Sort of. I mean, you obviously add stuff to your deck that makes it a little bit unfair, but I just enjoy slowing the games down and making it so each decision was like more impactful, I guess.
Yeah.
Like you had to be really careful about which card you played because you were not sort of guaranteed that you could just play all your spells in a game.
Huh. How do you spell that?
How do I what?
How do you spell the card?
Winter Orb.
Winter Orb. Yes, sorry. Yes. Sorry, I'm so sorry. I heard like Windall or something. I'm like, what is he talking about? Yes, Winter Orb. Yes. And then how would you manipulate it with like Voltaic Key or what was your...
Icy Manipulator, yeah. I guess was the old one. And then later on, I loved Quarian Ranger, and you also had Undiscovered Paradise to go with it. You could play Mox Diamond. I think those were like the ones that were I mostly did with it.
That's cool.
But then you had Opposition at some point also came along.
Good stuff.
So it's still a thing you can do in Cube sometimes.
Yeah. Nice. That's fun. So when did you start becoming competitive? So, you know, you said at first you're just collecting and trading and playing casually, which most people do. So what was that transition to competitive like? When was that?
That happened around somewhere in Tempest Block.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't remember exactly, but I played my first pre-release there, which was sort of my first, probably, like, that was at least my first competitive limited tournament.
Yeah.
I probably played, like, in the local standard tournaments before that, but not much. But after that, it sort of went fast, and I just got hooked on doing them all the time. Like, every week, I would go to my local gaming store, and I would join in the standard tournament there, and I would actually ended up doing pretty well, and they were large, and I loved it. I loved the competitive aspect of it so much.
So when you, during that time frame, when you started getting competitive, what was an early challenge that you faced that you eventually overcame?
I guess the actual earliest would be having access to all the cards that I would like to play with. Because I was still a kid. You know, like Magic is sort of an expensive hobby.
Yeah.
And it was even back then. So like it wasn't always that I could like afford to have the perfect sort of setup for whatever deck choice I was trying to play. I mean, it didn't take that long because after a while you made friends with other people and then you could borrow and lend cards to each other. So it worked out, I guess. But that would have been like the first obstacle, the very first.
And you just mentioned the way you overcame that was by, you know, making friends and sharing cards?
Yes.
Nice. That's always a really good way, you know, to go about expanding your Magic collection.
Most local communities, people end up being like friends or at least on friendly standing, and you can usually borrow a deck on the cards you're missing, especially if it's for an important tournament. Like if you want to go to a GP, you should never go to a GP and feel like you cannot play the deck you really want to play. Then something is wrong. You should not go to a big tournament and not have access to the deck you most want to play.
Yeah, yeah. Make some friends before you go to the GP.
Yeah, for sure. It's also more fun to travel to a GP with friends.
Yeah, no kidding. So what would you say to somebody who's in a similar situation? They're just starting to get competitive. They might not have all the cards that they want in their collection or whatever. What advice can you give them to kind of help move them along, shortcut the process, the learning curve?
I think you could try and improvise, I suppose. I mean, you actually learn a lot if you play with cards that are not quite as good as the best ones.
Uh-huh.
And it's probably harder to do today than it was back then, because Magic is evolving faster now than it was back then. And like it's the internet wasn't like that big of a thing back then either.
Right.
So like information just travels so much faster now. So I'm not sure it's actually doable. But I know I played a lot of like cards that weren't like really good back then, and I sort of learned a lot from that, I think. Like just playing weaker versions of the good cards, but they were still functional, and trying off the wall combos, stuff like that. It is probably not going to work as well today, but I think you can still learn a lot from doing it.
Yeah, from just trying to make what you have work.
Yes. If card availability is a problem, yes.
Yeah. Neat. So you started, getting more involved in the competitive scene, and as you have developed, you've had ups and downs along the way. And what would you say has been your worst Magic moment?
There was a Worlds. I forgot if it was like 2007, 8, 9-ish. It was sometime after I had moved to Thailand, and I hadn't actually been playing Magic a lot. But back then, because rating qualified you for tournaments, and I hadn't been playing and my rating had been high, and then I had moved region, all of a sudden I had this Worlds qualification. So I went to the Worlds, but as I had not played at all, I was very rusty. And it feels bad when you know you can be better than what you are doing at the moment. So I had a really bad tournament experience there where I did not really know what was going on in either the draft format or the standard format. It was the year Junk was really, really good. And it just taught me that if I want to play competitive Magic, I need to put in the time to do so. I cannot just hope or sort of rely on past experiences. You need to like be up to date on everything that.
You cut out for a second. It'd be up to date on what?
On what is happening. Like you cannot just assume that because you were good at some point before this, that you will still be good and you will have the same.
Yeah.
Or that the knowledge will like transfer perfectly.
So is competitive Magic then a perishable skill?
If it's a what?
Is it a perishable skill? So then that diminishes over time if you don't use it?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. If you don't train sort of or do testing all the time, you will lose your edge. I think we could actually see it with one of the best players in the game for the past year, Luis Scott Vargas. I thought his game deteriorated from watching his videos, from what it was before he took the year off to do only commentary.
Yeah,
I think that shows it very well, because it's a very it's a case that is sort of very in your face, because everyone watches him play all the time.
Yeah, a very recent example. Oh, that's very a very astute observation. Okay,
so but you also have it with a lot of the Hall of Famers, like the older ones. Who doesn't play on the Pro Tour anymore, and sometimes they come back and they almost always do fairly bad.
Yeah, good point. So you got to. you got to stay involved and keep playtesting and keep at it if you want to be good at competitive Magic.
Yes, cool. And it's partly because there are new cards all the time, and like you cannot just say a 2/4, 2/5 flyer for 5 mana is good or bad. It's sometimes good and it's sometimes bad. But right. If you don't play enough, you won't actually know that.
So to be that involved, to do that, it takes a lot of dedication. You have to really want it. So how has dedication impacted your life? Obviously, you've dedicated yourself to different things throughout your life. And what does that look like? How has dedication impacted your life?
I mean, I spend a lot of time doing it. So I spend most of my free time doing Magic stuff. But I also enjoy it very much. I think it's really fun. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it. Like, I'm not doing it for the money, obviously. It's just a great game. And I enjoy that it changes so much all the time as well. I think that is one of the best things about it.
And has your dedication to Magic impacted other areas of your life as well?
I mean, poker and Magic has some things in common. So mm-hmm. I use stuff from both games in the other game. But aside from that, not really, no.
So there are some skills that that cross over, yeah. I'm sure.
There's a lot of like math calculations that you do that are sort of similar in both. There's some risk taking that you have to get used to. Sometimes you have to say, okay, I cannot win unless this happens. So now I have to go for it, even if it's a low percentage play.
Right.
That can happen in both games. And on the other hand, you also have the opposite scenarios, of course. Hmm. But yeah, they have some common ground.
Cool. Now, on your journey, the flip side of lows are obviously the highs. So what has been your proudest Magic moment?
My proudest Magic moment. There's been a couple. I mean, the obvious one would be saying the Mox win, but it's actually not that one. I think I got ninth at Worlds in 2005. I think that was my actual proudest accomplishment because I got ninth on tiebreakers, which obviously hurts a little. But I was just really proud about how I had approached that tournament. I also got a little lucky in it, but you need luck to have a really good tournament in Magic anyway. So that's fine, I guess. But that tournament, I was really proud because I had actually, on my own, or with my small own little testing group, identified the best standard deck, I thought. And that was something that was, for me, was really hard to do back then.
Mm-hmm. Neat. So it's always nice when efforts pay off. And like you said, you were able to put in the work, identify the best standard deck, and then go forth and have a great result.
Yes. yeah, I think that is actually the achievement in Magic that I'm most proud of.
Nice. How did you go about identifying that deck? What was it? What did it look like? What was that time like?
It was playing nonstop for a month, I guess, with friends and everyone in the store who would play and just trying out all the different different configurations of the deck.
Yeah.
And it was also a deck I enjoyed playing a lot, which helped. Because otherwise, playing the same deck for a very long time is not that interesting to me, I guess.
What deck was it?
It was like a blue-red Obliterate March of the Machines deck.
Oh.
In a format that was infested a lot by Affinity. And they could play artifact land, so you got to like play Armageddon on them.
Oh, very nice.
So, yeah, that was kind of funny.
Oh, man, that's neat. It's neat to, yeah. Yeah, like I said, it's neat to put in effort and then see it pay off, and that's really neat. That's really neat. So, most recently, what have been some of your Magic highlights?
Well, I went to the Mox last month, and I got fourth place there. That's obviously a very nice achievement.
Yeah. So, do you do a lot of Magic Online now?
Yes, I still do a lot of Magic Online. I did a lot. Just before the Mox, I prepared a lot for it because it's such a small tournament with like such a high payout that I felt it was worth it to take off a couple of weeks and just do Magic Online full time, basically.
Yeah.
But even now, I still do a draft or two a day, and that's how I've been doing for the last 3 years, basically. But I am a little burned out right now. Like after playing this much Magic for the past, a month, I guess.
So as far as, you know, Magic Online goes, is that's, you know, what you've been doing and how you kind of popped up on my radar. Let's talk a little bit about that and kind of share some ideas or tips with the prodigies about Magic Online. So when you are playing, you just do drafts is kind of where you stay, or do you do any of the other tournaments? Or
I do draft like 90% of the time. Yeah. Okay. The only times I really play constructed is when there's a MUX qualifier for it. And then I probably like, I don't really test that much for those. I pick up it. I find a deck I think is good on paper. And then I play it for maybe 2, 3, 4 leagues just to get a feel for the deck. And then I just go for it. Hmm. So I'm not really preparing that much for half of the MUX tournaments, but I draft a lot. And I think that is just the most fun way, to play Magic, at least for me.
And do you maintain a collection of Magic Online?
I do. I keep almost all the cards, actually. At least I try to draft enough so that I get at least 4 of each.
Yeah.
Which for sometimes that's for the Mythics, it can be really tough because you need to then you need to draft a lot.
Yeah.
But I for the rares for sure, and sometimes the Mythics, sometimes I end up having to buy 1 or 2 of each. And it also depends a little on how fun I find the set.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. And then you use those cards in the constructed events?
Yes.
Okay.
When I have to. When I'm forced to play the constructed events.
That's very wise. Very wise. So playing mostly draft on Magic Online, I'm sure. What do you see and what do you pick up? And like, how do you. Playing so much, I'm just trying to learn what are some of the tips that you have for drafting so much online?
You have to probably have to start out being somewhat responsible with regard to financials, because it can be very expensive. Like the competition on Magic Online drafts is really hard.
Uh-huh.
People are generally very good at it, and you will meet not only random grinders like me, but there's also all the pro players are using it as a tool to test. So that is one thing where I think you should be careful that you don't like make a budget, have a plan for not overspending. But besides from that, Magic Online is also the best way to learn and learn fast, because you have to sort of shape up or you will just keep losing and no one wants to lose.
Yeah. What are some of the ways to shape up? What are some tips that you have as far as, you know, not banging your head against the wall over and over and over again?
Yeah. So you watch videos, watch streams on Twitch. That is a really great way, because even if you're watching someone that you think is maybe not even better than yourself, you can still learn from them. Like anytime you spot a mistake or something you think is wrong, and that helps you because you are building confidence from like seeing the mistake and knowing that it was a mistake.
Yeah.
Or if not, you are learning like a new way of thinking about a situation. And you can ask questions in Twitch chat also. That's great.
Yeah.
I watch Twitch a lot too. I use it as sort of my TV time, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of like very good players that do drafts there as well. And you can definitely learn a lot. And also like you can, all the videos, content that is put up everywhere is great. From and many of those are like from the pros of the game.
Yeah.
That is the, for me, that is the way I sort of, if there's something I feel like I'm behind in a format, or like I feel like I'm not doing so well, I usually take like some time off to watch and at least familiarize myself with what is going on again. Or like just make sure that I'm not crazy, because Magic has a lot of variants also. And it can be really tough to sort of see beyond the variants that might have hit you in a bad way for like a run.
Yeah.
Like even though I'm one of the probably most successful drafters, I still have like, I can still have those 10 drafts in a row where I just lose round one and I'm out. And, you know, at that point, you start to feel like, what am I doing wrong? Why is every deck I have, why It's like I'm either mana screwed, I'm flooding, or like they always have the removal spell, or they always top deck, or something goes wrong, right?
Yeah.
Then it's really good to watch other people play and see, oh well, what I'm thinking is not necessarily wrong, and I'm not necessarily doing something wrong. It just happens this way in the game sometimes.
So playing a lot of Magic Online, I'm interested, what does good sportsmanship look like on Magic Online?
I think this might be a little controversial, but I think don't say GG if you're winning. It's like, I don't know how it ended up being this way, but it actually is a feel bad if you are on the losing side and someone says GG to you. If you're on the losing side, I think it's fine and great. If that is, and you can also, most opponents I find are actually willing to talk about the game afterwards. Like, either they win or lose, it doesn't matter so much. So you can also learn something from that. Like, you could ask them, why did you do that? Or, but that is, I think that is just basically, there isn't that much interaction besides from that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, you don't, most games, there's no chat at all going on. So it's hard to have like real sportsmanship in the game itself.
Yeah. So when you go to a paper tournament, what does good sportsmanship look like there?
Be nice to your opponent, always. Like, they're there to play Magic and have fun too. I mean, it is a game that we've, for the most part, is playing to have fun. So we should try to make sure we all have fun.
And so,
like, just be nice and polite, I guess.
And yeah, I totally agree. So two of the qualities that of sportsmanship that I like, or that stand out to me, one is winning with grace, and the other one is losing with class. So on that topic, how do you handle loss?
I try to not let it affect me at all while I'm at a tournament, because there will be time after the tournament to reflect on it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably have another round or like in very, very close after. So that if you are still sort of hanging onto that loss, it will maybe make you play worse. Or, you know, maybe you will end up being not a nice person to the next opponent you have just because of that loss in the previous round. So basically, I try to not think about it at all. I try to let it go away and wash over me, even though it can be hard, of course, if it's really an important one.
Yeah. But,
you know, it's also a thing where if you have experience, the more experience you gain with it, the better you are probably at handling losing a game of Magic. And Magic is a game where you will lose a lot of games. You cannot expect to win all the time because of how the game works.
Yeah. And the other side, winning with grace, what does that look like? What does that mean for you?
I think mostly it means trying to look at your opponent and sort of decipher how to move on from there. Like, is it okay to say something to them, or are they more looking like they want you to just stand up, sign the slip and leave?
And leave, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, like, some people want to sort of be left alone and so they can digest the loss, I guess. And other people want to talk about it. And I think both are fine, but, like, it's a human reading thing, mostly, because we're not all the same.
Yeah, that's for sure. And that's a good point, you know, so get better at reading people, like you said. Some are like, oh, like, let's talk about it. Like, where was my mistake? Did you see anything? What about you? And like, they just kind of want to dive into it, which is really cool. And other people, they just want you to leave. So getting getting better at reading that.
Yeah, some people just want to brood a little, and some people really want to talk with you. So they're different styles on both sides again.
Yeah. So you play Magic online and in paper and all around the world. What's the biggest mistake that you see players make?
I generally don't see people make very big mistakes. like overall mistakes, I think that is a really tough question for me because I don't have an off the top of my head answer. I think they tend to value for drafting other people's opinions a lot.
Really?
And to the letter.
Huh.
Yeah, it's like if you have a pick order that you have seen from someone else, then I think I see too many people go, oh, how come you didn't pick this? Because it's better than that card. But it's all contextual.
Hmm.
So that I think that is the mistake I see most often. But that is specifically for drafting.
Yeah, and that's great. So how do you break free from that? How does somebody avoid that mistake?
That comes with experience mostly, I think, because you have to sort of know that even though there is like a sort of power ranking for all the cards in every set, that it changes depending on what you already have, what kind of deck are you building, and what is generally going on in the format as well. Like, you cannot always just say that you should take the removal if it's a little better than the creature, because sometimes you really need the creature instead. Mm-hmm. Even though if it was like the first pick in a pack, you would always take the removal spell because it is a better card. So, but it is something you experience in drafting is very valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, and you get that experience by doing it.
It's hard to sort of make it talk about it as a thing that is a general thing.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It so quickly becomes very specific.
And that's when just doing it a lot comes in handy. You know, you got to draft each set to kind of see what the differences, the nuances of each set.
Yes, like the first 20 drafts. For me, whenever a new set comes out, it's like almost like a write-off. I just want to try things out. I want to like play with every card, as many cards as I can put my hands on. And I don't really care so much about the results as much as I care about trying to figure out which of the cards are sort of overperforming, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is some of the creatures stacking up nicely for the format for some reason that I couldn't see when I read through a spoiler? Like, most recent example is the 2/5 flyer that is surprisingly good.
You are not the only one to say that.
No, I mean it's become after a while it's just common knowledge.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I just think it's interesting that this is just evidence that there are those cards that you can identify, and you're not wrong when you identify a card like that because it's just so good. So yeah.
Yes, just for some reason it works in this format. Like, it just blocks everything and it attacks through everything. And those are the cards I'm sort of trying to identify early on. Basically, I want to, like, because I have everyone after reading a spoiler, you have like notions about which cards are the best and the worst and which cards are good and bad in general. But figuring out exactly how how everything pans out is impossible without playing with the cards.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, so what are you looking for? And so you kind of mentioned looking for creatures, for example, that are overperforming or underperforming. So how do you identify an overperforming creature?
Well, that is a creature that can, on its own, can blank multiple of my opponent's creatures usually.
Yeah.
Or if it's providing a sort of a free win or like a route to victory that none of the other cards could do on their own. Those are the easiest ones to identify. Sometimes you need you're looking for a blocker, something that can stymie, let's say, a red-white aggressive deck. Like, then you need a specific toughness to stop the bleeding from them. And it obviously cannot cost too much mana as well. Like, you're not just looking for any six drop, but like, that's a card like the 1/7 could have been much better than it actually is. For some reason, it doesn't do enough. It doesn't do it fast enough, and it doesn't kill anything relevant with the one power.
Hmm. Yeah. And then how do you support, you know, those creatures? Because you can't get, for example, you can't get the 2/5 flyer every single time. Or when you do, your deck is not all of that. So what do you do to kind of support it?
You're like, I don't, the question is a little weird. Like, you are...
Yeah, I don't really understand.
So I guess once you have identified the overperforming creatures, like the ones that are they're really good that you always want, there's more to a deck than just those. So what are the other things that you're looking for when you're getting to know a format?
You're looking for the curves that you need to be functional. That means you cannot just get overrun by half the decks. Like you need to have like figure out how many two drops is needed for any format. Hmm. Sometimes it's like three is enough because it gives you around 50% to have one in your opener, like on turn two. And sometimes you just want as many as you can get because the format is all about like curving two into three into double two. Hmm. And then you win the game if you can do that. And so curve is really important. Like your how high can you sort of make your curve and still be a viable deck? And sometimes it's really tough because there can be multiple archetypes that are very different from each other. So it sort of muddles everything if it is like that. And sometimes it's more straightforward where you have almost all the decks follow the same rule for how high can we actually go on the curve.
On the subject of two drops, is that a set number? Three two drops is gives you 50% chance of having one by turn two?
Yes,
I'm sure there's math that's involved. So,
again, sorry.
I said I'm sure there's math that has this figured out already.
Yeah, I think I think if you have three two drops, you are about 50% to have one on turn two.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
That's just like a nice rule of thumb.
Yeah,
sort of. Yeah. And then obviously it's better to have more. Like it's hard to have a deck that doesn't want the good two drops. The question is, how bad a two drop are you willing to put in your deck?
Got it.
And usually the answer is not, you don't want a Goblin Piker anymore. Because they're not good enough.
Yeah. All right, cool. Very cool. So what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Patience. And that you cannot always win, I guess. I think those are the two most important things.
So like, how has patience popped up in non-magic experiences?
Yeah, but that is non-magic experiences. I guess you have to sometimes, I don't know. you have to be very patient in poker.
Mm.
And you also have to be patient in magic sometimes. So I guess those are correlated a bit.
Yeah.
But like outside of that, it's, yeah, I don't know.
I think patience is a...
Like patience in limited is like you have to wait on your removal spell for a long time sometimes.
Yeah.
Because if you have decks where you, like if you play a long game one and then you sort of know all of your opponent's cards, especially back in, if you're playing in a pot and you can figure out how many rares they can actually have from what you have seen and what have been passed around in a draft. And then you know that you basically just need to kill this one card with your destroy target creature effect. So that requires can require a lot of patience to just sit there and hold the card, even though they have other cards that would be nice to kill because it might enable some attacks.
Yeah.
Like you need to figure out, how do I win this game? And if the best way, like the most, the way that sort of guarantees it can often be to be really, really patient because your deck just has a better long-term game plan. Or like if you laid out all the cards in both decks, you would win the game.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. And I've definitely been in that spot where I have the removal and they haven't played the one creature that I'm looking for yet. And I'm like, man, like it'd be nice to kill this thing that's right here right now because it's really bugging me or whatever. But yeah, you're right. Like just having that patience. And but then it's like, if I use this here, I don't have anything if they get the big one. So yeah, that's a good point.
If they draw that another flyer or whatever it is, that is the actual route to victory most of the time. Like sometimes they would just draw five lands if you used your removal right away and you would win the game on the spot. You did it, right? That happens too sometimes.
Right.
But like knowing the big picture while playing limited is also a thing that I think a lot of people don't really see. Like they don't sort of visualize how, if you laid out both decks, what would actually happen. This also dictates a lot who will be the actual beatdown in a matchup. Like if you cannot win the game, if you both like put out all the cards, most of the time you're supposed to try and be the aggressor in the games. And yeah, that's I think that is a tough thing to do correctly.
Yeah.
And it's obviously very hard to do in like game one of most games because you don't really know. Sometimes you have it from the deck archetypes. You know that white-red will almost always be an aggressive deck. So you just have to make the game go long and you will most likely end up winning because you just have stronger late game cards than they do. And they must try and kill you before that happens, of course.
Nice. Very nice. So how many pro points do you have this season? You get some for the mocks, right?
No, you don't get any for the mocks.
Oh, wow.
I have 0 pro points. But I'm also, I'm not trying to qualify for the pro tour. I live in Thailand and the travel time to go to the PT is usually around 24 hours.
Oh, man. Yeah. So,
yeah. That is a little rough. and then there's also like, you know, the prep time that I have to would have to put into it to like for making myself feel like I gave me the best shot at doing well at the PT.
Yeah.
So it's just not something I'm really pursuing. I enjoy going to the mocks a lot, but it's also a much smaller tournament with a payout similar to a pro tour almost, I think.
Yeah.
So it's very different. But yeah, I'm not actually trying to be on the pro tour.
So the mocks then, tell us a little bit more about that, because you still get to go and all the competitors are in the same location, right?
Yes, we went this year. It was at Wizards headquarters, which was kind of funny. So everyone was there. They put out like 24 computers, and each player has his or her own spot. And then you get paired like in a normal tournament. There's like a standing board and a pairings board, and you go up between each round and check who you're playing against. And there are some technical setups things that you go through, and then the match just happens. So it, and I've, like playing it is as if you're sitting at home. There's no difference besides from that.
That's cool.
That is pretty cool.
And the payout's pretty good too. So.
Yes. I mean, it's a high profile tournament, but there's only one each year for Magic Online, right?
Right, right. And there's 24 spots. How do you get one of those spots?
You get the spots by winning and Mox Open. I think there are 4 each year that has 2 slots. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe there are 8 and they only have 1 slot each. But those, everyone can enter those. And on Magic Online, they end up looking like a sort of mini GPs where there's like 600 players or something. And it's sort of winner takes all, gets the spot to in the Mox. And that's one way. The other way is to win one of the quarterlies, which you qualify for by going 6-2 or better in a monthly.
Okay.
And then both monthlies and the quarterlies, they give points for a leaderboard, and the top 7 players on the leaderboard qualifies as well.
Oh, okay. Cool.
At the end of the year. And that was how I qualified. I qualified through the leaderboard.
Nice.
And then last year's winner is also qualified.
Well, that... Oh, last year's winner is qualified, so they come back and that's the last spot. Awesome.
Yes.
Very
so
neat.
It's like, world championship thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool. That's pretty cool. And yeah, that's neat. I need to learn a little bit more about that and talk about.
For me, it's great because I get to play almost all the tournaments from home. And then maybe once a year I have to travel somewhere. And then at least the tournament is like, it's big enough that I feel like I can justify going to it. But I haven't played a GP since 2010, for example. And that was in Bangkok.
Yeah.
But again, it's generally because I'm not interested in qualifying for the Pro Tour, really. So it doesn't really make sense to go to the GPs either.
Yeah. But, I mean, Magic Online is such a big part of Magic today that it really is cool to be able to chat with someone like you who plays a lot of Magic Online, did really well in the big Magic Online event, which is the Mox, and it's just cool to kind of get that other side, you know, that other perspective. So.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's very. I think it's different from trying to play Magic live, really.
Yeah.
In that, because you can do it from home, all of the tournaments, and they are pretty tough. There's lots of platinum, gold pros in them all the time as well. So you get to play against some of the other best players in the world.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So as we kind of head towards the end here, I want to remind the Prodigies, if you want to connect with Lars, you can do so on Twitter at underscore Malavi underscore. That's the best way to reach out to him. And Lars, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
Draft a lot. Mm-hmm. Draft a lot. It's fun, and it's it will also teach you to play better constructed, I believe. Limited is like the gateway to becoming a better overall Magic player, because you get to into situations where you have to think differently about how cards can work and what they could do. And you just get to like play a lot more strange games. Like constructed is much more linear in how a deck functions and against each other also. So well, drafting and limited in general is a very good way to learn.
Well, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you so much for your time, for sharing your experiences with us today. You are a hero among planeswalkers. It's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you.
Well, Lars, thank you so much for being our guest here on the show for episode 282. As always, Prodigies, you can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/LarsDam. I want to thank you so much for tuning in and listening. I really appreciate it. I wouldn't do this if it wasn't for people who listen like you. So there you have it. It's a great circle of life, and I appreciate you being a part of it. Before we close out, I want to say thank you again to Paragon City Games, our proud sponsor, as well as to the patrons. Thank you so much. mtgpro2.com/Patreon is where you can go to learn more about that. If you want to get some amazing tips and tricks, I highly suggest you join our newsletter, which is now being released on Fridays as opposed to Thursdays, and is being written by the one and only Jeff Sheeran. That's right. If you're on the newsletter, you know that he had to step away for a little bit, but we got him back. I twisted his arm, and here he is, happy to be back, and he has a lot of really deep insights to the game, and does a great job with the newsletter, so you can go to mtgpro2.com and hop onto the newsletter that way if you want to dive deeper into some of these topics and really get yourself set up for your next big event. But there you have it. Get out there and turn some cardboard sideways this weekend. Hope you're liking Dominaria as much as me, and I hope to hear all about your endeavors. Until next time, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.